Are you ready to talk baseball? Well, step up to the plate. You're listening to Passion for the Pastime. And here's your host, Walter.
Hey, how's it going, everybody? And welcome back to another episode of the podcast. Hope you are doing well, staying safe, and being healthy out there. And by the way, I hope that all of you watched some baseball over the weekend. And in particular, the Dodgers-Padres series. That was, I mean, you're talking about October baseball in April? Yeah, that's what we got. That's what we got. It had the atmosphere of a playoff series. It felt like we were watching the NLCS. Maybe that's a preview. Are we overstepping? Are we giving it to them too quickly? I mean, Padres do have their injuries. They have their situations. I mean, hopefully Fernando Tatis Jr. can last throughout 162. But I mean, what we got over the weekend, if that's what we are expecting in October, let me just say, that's going to be an exciting October to see the Padres and the Dodgers. If it's NLCS, if it's NLDS, whatever, whenever they play, it's going to be exciting. But don't sleep on the Giants. Don't sleep on the Giants. When you wake up this morning, you check the standings, you're looking at the standings, you're seeing the Giants tied with the Dodgers for first place. So I'm just saying, they're talking about the rivalry over in San Diego with the Dodgers. They're talking it up. Obviously, they have the star power, but the real rivalry is up north. The real rivalry is with the Giants and the Dodgers. I can't wait until they play against each other at the end of May. It seems like a little long of a wait for the first appearance, the first matchup against these two clubs. First time that they play in San Francisco is going to be in May, at the back end of May, I believe it starts May 21st. But you know, with Tatis Jr., they have the star power. You got Eric Hosmer down there. You got Manny Machado, the starting staff. You got Yu Darvish. I mean, it's reason to. I mean, they have the star power to compete with Los Angeles, right? I mean, who do you really think of when you talk about the Giants in a national scale? Mike Yastrzemski, Buster Posey is probably it. I mean, maybe Johnny Cueto, but do people really want to talk about, you know, Alex Wood? Do they want to do they mention Anthony Discofani? I mean, we have a lot of players that are good ball players, but they're not the star players. They're not the Fernando Tatis. They're not the Blake Snell. They're not the Yu Darvishes. They're not the Manny Machados. So I understand why they're hyping up that rivalry, because they have the stars. But it was a star-studded weekend in Los Angeles. Fernando Tatis, Trevor Bauer were at the forefront of it. And we're going to get into all of that with Los Angeles Times sports writer Mike DiGiovanna. We're going to talk to him. We're going to get his perspective on everything that went down in Los Angeles with the Dodgers and the Padres. Going to talk a little bit about the Tatis situation. If you don't know, Tatis was... So there was a lot of back and forth between Fernando Tatis Jr. and Trevor Bauer. There was a lot of back and forth. Tatis hit a home run off of Trevor Bauer. He covered his eye while he was rounding the bases to kind of, you know, throw shade at Trevor Bauer, who did that while he was pitching in a spring training game. And I don't like to agree with Trevor Bauer too much, and I have already on this podcast more than I'd like to, because he's a Dodger, man. You don't want to like the guy. But from what he said afterwards in regards to Tatis, you know, showing up the home run, covering the eye, he said that he liked it. Hey, he got me. Right? He got me. He can celebrate it. And I feel like that is kind of the mindset that baseball should embrace, because yeah, I understand, you know, the showboating, the showmanship, you know? I mean, we're here to be entertained. If you're not being entertained, if you just want to watch the guy run around the bases, I mean, sure. That's the old school way of thinking, right? I would say that. But you know, there comes a little bit of a level of respect, and it wasn't any disrespect. It was just they were having fun against each other, and I guess it just depends on who the player is. I mean, if the player has an issue with it, like, don't expect, you know, Tatis Don't expect Bumgarner to take lightly to Tatis like shooting snot rockets while he's rounding after smashing a home run. I mean that's not the guy that you want to do it with. But Trevor Bauer, he embraces it, so I kind of like it. I like that he's embracing the fact that Tatis kind of gave him a taste of his own medicine. He kind of calls for it. But at the same time, you know, when you listen to Bauer, what he says is, well, he got me. He has the right to celebrate, because you bet next time when he comes up, I'm going to try to strike him out so I can showboat all over him. So it's like I'm not quoting verbatim, but I mean, that's pretty much the gist of what Trevor Bauer is saying in response to Tatis. But the other thing with Tatis was he was caught possibly stealing signs, right? Stealing signs, which I don't believe that Tatis was stealing the signs. I mean, when you look at the tape, he is looking at the catcher. I believe it was Will Smith at the time. He's a young catcher. And he was looking at the catcher. He was looking straight down. I mean, what's he looking at? Is he looking at the plate? No, he's not looking at the plate. Come on. But I don't think that he could have gotten the signs from that perspective. If anything, what is even more important, or not, well, not necessarily more important, but if anything, he was looking where the catcher was setting up, right? And that's all on Will Smith. I mean, he has to do a better job at setting up, you know, pre-pitch. And as to when he does it, if he does it late, or, you know, he bluffs to the left and then shifts to the outside, that's an art in the game that catchers have to do. Not saying that you should be expecting hitters to take a peek as to where you're setting up, but that is a possibility. So you have to factor that in when you go to frame and go to set up for the pitch that's to come. So when Tatis looks, he sees that he's setting up on the outside. So he's like, all right, well, I'm going to look outside. And he got it. It was like 2 feet off the plate, and he smashed it. So, I mean, whose fault is it really? Is it really Tatis Jr.? I mean, he wasn't doing it all the time, but, you know, we get into the conversation of unwritten rules, right? We get into the conversation of unwritten rules, and is it okay for him to do that? There's nothing in the rule book that says that he can't take a peek. There's nothing that says that he can't take a peek. And what do runners do on second base? You know, they try to relay signs to the hitter. That's what happens. That's part of the game. Now, when you say sign stealing, you know, everybody gets a little bit emotional about it because of everything that happened with the Astros. But this is a little bit different. I mean, you're using your head, you're using your eyes, you're using it in game. You're not using outside technology, which is, you know, it's part of the game. It's been there. So if you don't like it, you got to change up what you're doing then. You know, and I'm talking about Will Smith. So I don't know where you guys stand on that situation, but we're going to talk with Mike DiGiovanna and get his take on the Tatis-Bauer exchange. And then also, you know, around the National League West, because we have a lot of storylines. Madison Bumgarner threw a no-hitter in a 7-inning game. Where is your stance on whether that is a true no-hitter? I mean, it was slated for 7 games. Everybody knew you were going, or 7 innings, rather. Everybody knew you were going 7 innings. So why isn't it seen as legitimate? Baseball is so wishy-washy. MLB is so wishy-washy. Everything else counts in that game. Everything else counts in this 7-inning no-hitter. But baseball's like, no, we're not going to see it as a no-hitter. What do you mean? He still gets the W. He gets the strikeouts. I mean, if for some reason the Diamondbacks go on this historic run and only allow so and so hits, that'll be included in a record. Would it not? I mean, they held the Braves to one hit over 14 innings in a doubleheader. One hit. Now you mean to tell me that isn't historic in itself, 14 innings of one-hit ball, and if they go on longer and this stretch continues, they're not going to mention that in record books? But then again, the no-hitter is null and void because it's not a legitimate game. It's not nine innings. That makes no sense. It counts in every single category. And I know it, I might sound like a homer because it's Mad Bum. I mean, the former Giant. But I've been kind of rough on Mad Bum. I've kind of been saying that he needs to retire because he's been looking really bad up until this last start. So I would say that from what I'm saying isn't necessarily, you know, I have a biased opinion on Mad Bum. This is solely, if it was Trevor Bauer and he threw a seven-inning no-hitter, or if it was anybody else, you know, anyone that I dislike, I would still hold the same thought in that this should count as a no-hitter. Why does it not count as a, it's not like the game was shortened due to inclement weather. It's not like that. The game was predetermined to be seven innings. Everyone knew it was seven innings going into it. So how are you going to say that it's not a legitimate no-hitter? I mean, at that point, well, then definitely the 60-game season is not a legitimate title. I mean, I've joked about it. But if we're talking about the seven-inning no-hitter not being legitimate, but then you want us to hold the World Series 60-game season as a legitimate title, then what's happening? Like, what are we talking about here? And if it's not legitimate, then why play the seven-inning game if you're not going to count it as a regular game? Makes no sense. Baseball is just, they're so mismanaged. God, it's so frustrating. But more frustration on mismanaged is the Rockies. I mean, God, man. Their GM resigned. And I'm surprised that it came in a resignation. I'm surprised that it lasted this long. I'm surprised that they picked him over Nolan Arenado. The Rockies just have so much wrong in that organization. They have no direction. I feel bad for the fans. I really do. They have no direction as to where they're going. And I feel bad for the Rockies fans, but I also feel bad for who is going to take over that GM spot. That has to be the worst job that is available. Yes, it's a job, but it is pretty bad. Like, you are pretty much building that organization from the ground up. So whoever goes in there, I mean, they have to have like a 5-10 year plan. you know what I mean? Like, it's gonna be a process, and it's gonna be a challenge. Because the interesting thing with Coors is, well, do you try to load up on pitching or do you load up on hitting? I mean, with that ballpark, it would almost be dumb to load up on pitchers, right? I mean, you try to find pitchers. But you got to load up on that offense. That's where it is. You got to out-mash people in Coors Field. That's what the ballpark plays to. So, I mean, whatever happens in Colorado, whoever they decide to go with, it sounds like they're going with someone in-house for the interim. But whoever gets that job is going to have a tall task, because you're not only having to rebuild your own franchise. Guess what? You have the Padres, the Dodgers, and the Giants in your division. Arizona kind of in a weird situation, in a weird time frame at the moment, but they're still able to compete. In the hierarchy of the NL West, the Rockies have to be at the bottom. And then the question comes, well, what happens with Trevor Story? He's almost 100% dealt, right? To start a new regime, to get some prospects in there. It's a free agent coming up next year, so it sounds like he's going to be gone. There's going to be a lot of movement in Colorado. But yeah, I think that it took a little too long for this to happen. And the fact that it was a resignation, I mean, I'm surprised that the dude was not fired. I'm surprised. He was there for 17 years, but I am surprised, that, I mean, I guess you know, a little bit of respect, but look where the franchise is. But is that all on the GM, too? Is that all on the GM, or is that an organizational problem? The Rockies as a whole, something needs to change. It's not only the GM. It is not only the GM. GM has a big say in it and is going to wear it for sure. But he was able to be there for 17 years. No change. How many times did they make the playoffs? Maybe like twice, three times maybe. And they didn't even go deep at that. I believe the last time that they were in the playoffs, they got outed by the Brewers, I think. So, a lot of stuff going on in the NL West. But we're going to head down south here to talk with Mike DiGiovanna, LA Times sports writer. We're going to talk Dodgers, Padres, and everything else that's going on in the NL West, the Wild West, as we like to call it. So that's coming up next. You are listening to Passion for the Pastime podcast. All right, everybody, welcome back to Passion for the Pastime. Your host, Walter, here, and we are joined by LA Times sports writer Mike DiGiovanna. Mike, how you doing this morning over there in Los Angeles?
Doing well. The sun is shining. No complaints.
love the last name, by the way. I assume it's Italian, right?
Yes, Sicilian to be exact.
Oh, nice, nice. tell me a little bit. You know, your best Italian dish. Like, what would you recommend for me? Because I love Italian food.
I'd have to go with probably some big ziti and meatballs, you know, the basics.
All right. I like that. So Mike, thank you for coming on to the podcast. I really appreciate it. We got a lot going on in Los Angeles. How do you keep track of it all? I mean, you got Ohtani over there, pitching and hitting, you know, triple digits exit velocity and throwing triple digits. And then you got the Dodgers, reigning champions and going toe to toe with the Padres. How do you keep track of all that?
Admittedly, it's a challenge. I'm sort of the swing guy. I cover both teams, so I have to sort of try to stay on top of both teams as best as I can. Probably a little more Dodgers-centric than Angels, but, you know, when Ohtani's pitching, I try to either record or watch the game. You know, like there'll be some pre-games where maybe I'm on a Zoom call with the Dodgers and then the Angel games in another time zone. So just try to watch as much as I can and follow by reading as much as I can. You know, we have a really fine writers covering both teams and columnists and our national baseball writer, Bill Shaken. So we have a lot of coverage. So try to read up as much as I can on both teams. And of course, you know, covering a lot of games in person and as well as on the TV. So it's a challenge, but it's something I've done for a couple of years now.
Well, the weekend series, I mean, had to be the top priority, right? With the Dodgers and the Padres going toe to toe. What was your main takeaways from that kind of battle of the Titans for the second time this year already?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a really interesting series. They've played seven games already, and if you look at the numbers, they're so close, 32-30 in runs. I think the teams have been within two runs of each other for something like 62 of the 68 innings they've played. Both very talented, very deep, great starting pitching, dynamic offenses, star caliber, you know, players. And I do think, you know, this last series in Los Angeles where the Padres took 3 of 4, and, you know, coming back from a 6-run, 7th-inning deficit on Sunday night, I think that was a real confidence booster for them. Not that they needed so much a confidence booster, but more of an affirmation that, hey, man, we can play with these guys, and we have just as much talent. They do seem to get up for the Dodgers as much as any team, so that was interesting to watch. And I wrote a story about this today. About the only thing that seems to separate these teams is the Padres' running game. They stole 18 bases in 19 attempts in seven games against the Dodgers so far. And, you know, even though the stolen base is not as big a factor in the game as it used to be, when you when you pressure a team on the bases like that, when you're rattling pitchers by, you know, either stealing bases or the threat of stealing bases, you're going to force them to make adjustments, whether it's shortening up their stride to the plate, throwing over more. It just distracts the pitcher more, and maybe that's going to lead to more mistakes. So I think it's just one of those little things that the Padres have really done a good job of exploiting. It's probably the only advantage they have over the Dodgers right now. So definitely long games, a lot of intrigue, a lot of big, you know, game-turning hits and defensive plays and signature moments. So a lot of fun, for the fans to watch. A lot of long nights for writers.
Yeah, you know, the art of the stolen base is kind of forgotten in baseball, so the Padres kind of taking it back a little bit. But yeah, like you said, that does add an element to the game, to the mental you know, psyche of the pitcher. So if the Padres could bother the Dodgers that much, I mean, maybe they're onto something. I don't know. Are we going to see more stolen bases around the league? Probably not.
I don't know. I mean, you know, Joe Maddon has talked this year about, you know, let's play 1985 baseball. And when I think 85 baseball, I think of the running Cardinals.
Right.
Who probably stole, 900 bases that year. I don't know about that. But, you know, I think they've played 24 games and they've already stole 32 bases. So that's a pretty good pace. You know, when you steal bases, I don't want to say you're risking injury, but you're adding wear and tear in your body. In Tatis's case, one good thing is that shoulder injury has forced him to go slide feet first instead of head first, which I think, as long as you're doing it correctly, can reduce wear and tear and prevent injury. So, yeah, you do risk some of that, and that can take a toll over a long season. So you have to pick your spots. But, there will come a point in time when these teams will probably play a 5 or 7-game series, and at that point, you know, all risk goes out the window, and that kind of element can really turn a series, a short series.
And the ability to get that extra 90 feet in those types of situations in the 7-game, 5-game series will be crucial. So that's going to be fun.
We saw in the 11th inning the other night, Sunday night, runners on first and second. Tatis reads the pitcher, young pitcher, Clevinger, hadn't been in the big leagues long. Didn't look him back twice. He gets a running start at second. They double steal. Machado pops up. Hosmer hits a fly ball to center field. Instead of there being two out with runners on first and second, there's a sacrifice fly and the winning run scores. So you saw it play out specifically right there. And yeah, the 90 feet, whether it's, you know, giving you the ability to score on a wild pitch or pass ball from third or from second on a single with two outs, can make a big difference.
We're talking with Mike DiGiovanna for the LA Times sports writer. We're talking a lot about the Dodgers and the Padres series, and we've mentioned Tatis quite a bit. Now, I got to get your take on this. A lot of storyline around Fernando Tatis this weekend and Trevor Bauer. And Tatis got the better of him, and he closed the eye. And that's a callback to when Bauer did that in spring training. What's your take on it, you know, moving forward in the game today?
I mean, I'm almost 60 years old, so I guess I'm old school. I'm not a big fan of all the theatrics, but as long as it's okay with the guys on the field, I'm okay with it. And Trevor Bauer, I'll give him credit. He seems to be perfectly fine with, you know, a batter kind of showing him up a little bit after a home run, because he kind of does the same thing on the mound with his, you know, putting the sword back in the sheath after a strikeout and doing the one-eyed Jack thing when he's throwing a pitch. So, you know, he opens himself up to that, and he thinks it's good for the game, and, you know, for the younger generation, maybe it is. But as far as the whole, you know, Tatis peeking back at a sign or, you know, where the catcher is setting up, that, yeah, as Bauer accurately said, that probably does cross the line. Now, I personally don't think Tatis got the sign for slider, but I do think he probably got an idea that the pitch was going to be away. And they had been pitching him away a lot that whole game. in that hole at bat. So, you know, there's a really easy remedy for that. You know, a good catcher, you'll see, will maybe set up outside as the pitcher's, you know, going into his windup and then lean far into the inside. And if that batter's diving into a fastball or a breaking pitch outside and gets buzzed with a fastball inside, he's going to be flat on his back. Problem solved. Maybe even gets hit with a pitch. So there's an easy way to remedy that. And as far as stealing signs, I don't see how a player can actually see the fingers from where he is between a catcher's legs, and that's easily addressed with a catcher just putting his glove above his left knee. So, you know, a lot was made out of that. I'm not sure much will come of it in the future, but certainly I think catchers can and should, you know, be more cognizant of how they set up and the way they set up and mixing things up that way.
Yeah, and it was an interesting situation, too, because he did get a home run, right, right after he peaked. But, again, I'm kind of on the side that you're saying, is that I'm not sure if he grabbed a sign and he knew what pitch was coming, but he definitely knew location for the catcher,
yeah.
Right? So, and that might even be even more effective to know location and where to look.
Yeah, he totally sold out in the outside pitch. And, I mean, he hit a home run off a ball that was –
right.
Essentially in the other batter's box,
right.
Which I know these guys have long bats and extension and power, but it was crazy that he homered on that pitch. But if you know, for a hitter that good, if you kind of know where a pitch is going to be and are pretty confident it's going to be a slider, you can time it. So, you know, all the power to Tatis. It's not illegal to peek back at the catcher. It's just you kind of do so at your own risk.
Do you think that baseball does anything to correct that? Because sign stealing has been such a sensitive topic, you know, as it goes back to the Astros 2017. Do you think that they do anything as far as that goes?
Yeah, it's called the old fastball in the ribs. You know, if they think guys are stealing signs or giving locations at second base, you're going to see some batters go down in the box. Probably a few benches clearing incidents. Maybe a fight here and there. Yeah, it's kind of the old way of policing the game, the unwritten rules, as they're called. But in terms of actual sign stealing, yeah, there's so many. I mean, look at any time there's a guy on second, the pitcher takes his hat off, looks in his hat for the sequence indicator. The catcher puts down, holds three fingers up. So whatever it is, you know, third sign, whatever it is, they have agreed upon, you know, in terms of their indicators and how they're changing up their signs. There's all sorts of ways to combat, you know, players from second, you know, giving signs to the batter. So, and you see it all the time. So, yeah, that's, and unfortunately, it's probably one of the things that slows the game up so much. So it's a little tedious at times to watch, but there's so much subterfuge going on, and it's just unfortunately become part of the game.
Now, since we're talking Dodgers, I have to ask you, because the storyline going into the season, I forget who said it, but they expected that Kenley Jansen would be gone from the closer role, and they even went out there to throw Dustin May into that position, which I thought was insane. But you know, with Kenley Jansen most recently giving up the game last night, do you think that that's a possibility? Not so much Dustin May, but a possibility that Kenley Jansen may lose his closer role, you know, in mid June.
I mean, that's always a possibility because it's actually happened over the last couple of years at various times. One thing Dave Roberts has the luxury of is he doesn't really have to demote Jansen publicly. He can just sort of alter his role a little bit. And once the Dodgers get to the postseason, you know, you're not going to go with a five-man rotation. And you saw what they did last year. They essentially moved Julio Urias into a closing role, and he got the last night out in Game 7 of the NLCS and the last seven outs of Game 6, clinching Game 6 of the World Series. They also have guys like Dustin May. You know, Tony Gonsolin has been hurt, but he's another guy who's capable. David Price could, you know, he just got hurt this week too, but he could fill some kind of late inning role. There's all sorts of options the Dodgers have to nail down those games. One option they unfortunately don't have is Corey Knebel, who was pitching great till he strained a lat muscle a couple days ago. So that could hurt him. But they have so much pitching depth and so many different ways to go. And I think, you know, you try not to dent a guy's pride or confidence, but, you know, Kenley has kind of gotten used to this whole rigmarole every year where he gets booed by the home fans. He comes back and redeems himself, and then he blows a save. It's sort of like a dance that the Dodgers have done every year for the last few years. But, you know, he's also in the last year of his contract, and I'd be very surprised if they brought him back because he's got a lot of mileage. They've gotten a lot out of this guy over the last 10 years, and he's been great for most of his tenure with the Dodgers. But, you know, what's the old saying? Father Time is undefeated. And, you know, I think it catches up with everyone eventually.
Well, and what's crazy is following Corbin Burnes, right? Have you been following him with the Brewers at all?
Yeah, a little bit because the Dodgers are playing them this weekend. What's he got, like a 200 strikeouts with no walks? I mean, it's amazing. That, yeah. You know, we talk so much about the Dodgers and Padres rotation, and they are great, but last I checked, the Brewers rotation has the best ERA in baseball, so, and they're playing in a much weaker division, so. That could be a big separator for them, but yeah, he's been amazing.
Yeah, it's been insane to watch. He pitched yesterday. I believe he had 9 strikeouts, and he's too shy from actually tying Kenley Jensen's record of the consecutive strikeouts without allowing a walk, which was at 51. So maybe Corbin Burnes does that when he plays against the Dodgers. That'd be fitting. But I mean, would you rather have DeGrom or Corbin Burnes at this point in their careers?
Oh man,
that'd be a good problem to have, right?
Yeah, I guess they're both really good, but you know, DeGrom is widely considered the best and most dominant pitcher. So I always like you know, when you get into a playoff series. Not that the Mets are close to that right now, but to have a guy like that who you can almost count on winning, you know, those two games he starts in a 5 or maybe even 3 in a 7 game, but certainly 2 in a 7 game series, you can almost bank those as wins. It's huge. So I'd probably give a slight edge to DeGrom right now.
We're talking with Mike DiGiovanna of the LA Times, sport writer for the LA Times. And we're talking baseball here. We talked about the Dodgers. We talked about the Padres. A little bit of Corbin Burnes there. Let's take a look around the National League, though. The National League West, to be exact. And breaking news yesterday with the Rockies, their GM resigned. Were you shocked in how that kind of transpired, or was that kind of writing on the wall for you?
I was only shocked that it didn't happen sooner. it's been a rough go for the Rockies, and they are, you know, just an awful winter where, you know, the GM and the star player Nolan Arenado are going back and forth and kind of crushing each other. And then the owner basically orchestrates the trade of said player to the Cardinals. Not only do they trade their best player to the Cardinals for maybe one decent prospect and a bunch of mid-level prospects, they're paying the Cardinals $51 million of that deal. So what's the message to your fans there? But mainly I just think, you know, there's been such a disconnect maybe between, you know, actual philosophies, and you know, it seems like they've been unable to stick to one philosophy for very long. You know, remember, I think they signed that Mike Hampton crazy contract going way back. That was a huge albatross for them. But it seems like, you know, a couple of years they'll be trying to develop and sign big hitters and try to slug their way to wins and you know, the thin air of Denver. And then there's years where they, you know, devote or commit to pitching and young pitching. And 1 year they spend like $100 million on relievers, Wade Davis, Jake McGee, and Brian Shaw. And they never seem to stick to any philosophy for very long. And it's when you add it all up, they haven't, you know, they've never won a division. They've only made the World Series once and were swept. And right now they're in a heap of trouble because their farm system is rated one of the worst in baseball. Their big league team is not competitive. Their best players, Trevor Story, going to be a free agent. I don't think they're going to re-sign him anytime soon. And they play in the best division in baseball with, you know, the Dodgers and Padres are not going away anytime soon. The Giants are on the rise. The Diamondbacks have a pretty good farm system. So it's just going to be a really long rebuild there. And they're going to have to hire, you know, a GM. In my mind, they need to really turn over the baseball operations to some kind of GM who has some innovative way ideas and can stick to a philosophy and, you know, merge good scouting and player development with analytics and how to best approach, you know, the whole Coors Field problem in terms of, you know, what kind of team do you want in that environment. So it's a huge challenge, and man, I feel bad for the Rocky fans because it's a great fan base. It's a great stadium, great city. I always love going there, and they are not going to have much to cheer about for quite a long time.
Well, and I feel bad for the GM that takes that job because that is that's going to be a tall task to turn that organization around because, yeah, like you said, their farm system is just bad. They've just been so mismanaged for so long. But, yeah, like you said, they've been throwing so many philosophies out there. It's kind of like they're throwing something at the wall hoping that it sticks, and nothing sticked, or they haven't waited long enough to see or tried long enough to see if it's going to stick. So it's an interesting situation in Colorado. They do have the All-Star game, so that's something to look forward to in Colorado. But now let's switch over to the Diamondbacks a little bit. Mad Bum, he threw the no-hitter. Or I guess, are you considering it a no-hitter since it was 7 innings?
Yeah, I mean, the rules have dictated that we're playing 7-inning games now. You did not allow a hit. It's pretty much that simple. I mean, what's the big deal? It's not like it was a perfect game. There have been, several hundred no-hitters in MLB. I might have a little more. I mean, my rationale doesn't fly here, but I guess if it was a perfect game, I think it'd be an even bigger, more talked about controversy right now. But I got to go with, you know, baseball dictates there's 7 innings in these games. No hit was allowed. To me, it's a no hitter. So I would give them a no hitter.
I mean, it counts as a W, right? It still counts in the win column. It's a legitimate game. And if they don't want to call it a no hitter, it kind of takes the legitimacy out of it. But yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah. Every other stat from the game counts, as far as I can tell.
Right. As far as we know, right? As far as we know.
And they almost threw two no-hitters that day, right? Wasn't the other game a one-hitter?
Yeah, they limited the Braves to one hit over 14 innings. That's just insane.
That's amazing. Yeah. Braves are a pretty damn good team.
Yeah, that's that in and of itself. I mean, that's crazy with all those bats. And then finally, Mike, you were talking about the Giants on the come-up. And they are currently tied right now. If you look at the standings, you know, I woke up, I was a happy camper this morning. Giants are tied with the Dodgers for the lead in the division. Your expert opinion, do you think that the Giants could actually make this a race? Do you think it's sustainable? How do you see the Giants playing out for the rest of 2021?
I think it's sustainable that they will be competitive. I don't see them overcoming the Dodgers or Padres at this point. It's possible they could sneak in, you know, the NL West could have the two wild card teams because I think, the Central is not very strong and the NL East, I think those teams are stronger, but they're going to beat each other up a lot with the 19 intra-division games. So, but then again, you know, the Giants have to play the Padres 19 times and the Dodgers 19 times. I think it's great what they're doing. I think Farhan really knows what he's doing up there. He's You know, he was with the Dodgers with Andrew Friedman for a long time. I think he's trying to and smartly, you know, pattern the way he's running that organization, the way the Dodgers have been run for the last 5-7 years. So, you know, they're in the right direction. So I give him credit for that. But I just don't think depth-wise and talent-wise, they're going to be able to compete over 162 games with the Dodgers and Padres.
Well, Mike, I hope you're wrong.
Yeah, I mean, nothing gets them. I just trying to be realistic.
Yeah. Well, they have the Padres coming into town. They did play the Padres early in the season, and I believe they won 2 out of 3 in San Diego to start the year. So they have the Padres coming in. We'll see how they match up. But I'm really intrigued because they don't play the Dodgers until, I believe, the end of May. So I'm very intrigued to see how the Giants stack up against the Dodgers, because it's always an entertaining series when they go against each other. I'm gonna try to get out to the ballpark, but yeah, it's at the end of May, so we'll see what happens there. But the NL West with the Padres, with the Dodgers just going at it, just trading blows, and my Giants just sneaking on by, just waving at them as they beat each other up. Hopefully they're able to keep that going for 162. I really hope so. Maybe they'll be a playoff team, though. That's kind of what I'm shooting for. I'm actually shooting just for 500 ball at this point, because, you know, they're in the rebuild. I'm realistic. But, you know, if they get into the postseason, I wouldn't be opposed to it.
Well, good luck.
Yeah. All right, Mike. Well, thanks for coming on to the podcast, talking baseball. I really appreciate it, man. And maybe we'll touch base down the line when the Dodgers come to town.
All right. Take care.
And again, that was Mike DiGiovanna of the Los Angeles Times, sports writer for the Los Angeles Times. You can go ahead and give him a follow on Twitter at Mike DiGiovanna to get all of your needs for the Los Angeles sports scene. Covers the Dodgers, covers the Angels, and whatever else that his editors throw at him per the bio on Twitter. So you guys have a good one. I hope you enjoyed this podcast, and we'll get ready for some more baseball talk, as next episode we will be speaking with the great Ken Rosenthal. So if you have any questions, feel free to send me a DM, shoot me a text, however you are able to get in contact with me, and field your questions, and maybe I'll get it in there as we talk to Ken Rosenthal on the next edition of Passion for the Pastime. You guys have a good one. Hope you enjoyed it, and I'll talk to you next time.